Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us today. Before we jump into our discussion on Common Core, let's talk about this day in history, September 30th. And also reminding you, tomorrow is a very important day, October the 1st. If you are a cell phone user, you can no longer pick it up and drive with it. It becomes a primary offense. Should have happened a long time ago because we don't need people running off highways talking on their cell phones. But tomorrow it's the law. That and the law will also take effect that says everybody in your car has to wear a seatbelt. But to me, more importantly, is that law saying that you cannot use a handheld device while driving. That goes into effect tonight, midnight. You can be pulled over just for that and ticketed. This day in history, September the 30th. Independence Day. Botswana becomes independent from Britain on this day. Who was born on this day is interesting. We have Lucinda Hinsdale Stone. She became one of the kind of great leading advocates for co-education, fighting for women's rights in this country, born in 1814. This was the day that Ann Martin was the first person to ever run for the U.S. Senate from the state of Nevada. She was the first American woman to run for the U.S. Senate, suffragist, pacifist. This was the day in 1928 that Elie Wiesel, the great philosopher and thinker, Holocaust survivor, was born. This is the day in 1935 that Johnny Mathis was born. We'll be hearing his songs during our breaks today. And this is the day in 1936 that Alombe Brath was born. He was one of the great leaders of the African consciousness movement in this country, of the Pan-Africanist movement around the world. He was an American. He was the creator of this thing called First Naturally Natural Beauty Contest. He was an advocate of the word black over Negro. He was an advocate of natural hair. He was an advocate of raising consciousness in America. He was an amazing intellectual figure. He was born on this day in 1936. This day in 1955, James Dean died in a fiery car crash. In 1750, on this day, Crispus Attucks escaped from his slaveholder. And later on, as you all know, went to become the first person to die at the Boston Massacre. We always think that's the only person who was black to fought the Revolutionary War, just the opposite, but he's the one that we remember in history. We need to remember more. This is the first day Louise May Alcott's beloved book, Little Women, was published. This was the day in 1889 that the Wyoming State Convention approved the right for women to vote in 1889. And what we forget about that is that that law was pushed by the polygamous wives of the Mormons who pushed that law to happen in Wyoming. Most folks, that's a very complex, interesting story. That's the day in 1920 that France pushed out Germany and took over Togo in West Africa. That's a show for another day. This is the day when Neville Chamberlain and signed the Munich Pact, giving Czechoslovakia to Hitler. This is the day in 1947 that Jackie Robinson became the first African-American to play in a World Series. And this was also the day that the USS Nautilus was commissioned by the U.S. Navy in 1954, the first atomic submarine. This is the day the Justice Department attorneys put a grand jury together to get indictments against those who committed mob violence at Central High School. It was also the day in 1962 in Oxford, Mississippi. James Meredith finally went to the University of Mississippi, but two men had already been killed in racial violence by that time. And there had to bring 3,000 federal troops in to quell that violence by white supremacists. In 1963, two men were arrested for being in the KKK and blowing up the church in Birmingham, though not much came of it after that, until 17 years later. This is the day in 1964 that the first big anti-war demonstration took place against the Vietnam War in Berkeley, California. Even though most Americans supported President Lyndon Johnson in the war. This is the day in 1975, the thriller in Manila took place. Ali beat Joe Frazier. This is the day in 1981 that Sandra Day O'Connor becomes the first woman to sit on the Supreme Court. This was a day in history in 2012 when the U.S. military death toll in Afghanistan reached 2,000. That's this day in history, September 30th. More information on our website at steinershow.org. Let's jump into our conversation here about Common Core. Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page as well. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. We are here with Kalman Hedelman, Buzzy Hedelman. Buzzy Hedelman is former Baltimore City Public School Board member, former director of Baltimore City Social Services, and former State Secretary of Human Resources, author of It's the Classroom, Stupid, A Plan to Save America's School Children. Rashawn Biddle is with us, editor of Dropout Nation, an online magazine of education issues and an educational policy analyst. Dr. Neil McCluskey is with us, associate director of the Center for Educational Freedom at the Cato Institute, author of Behind the Curtain, Assessing the Case for National Curriculum Standards, and Sean Johnson, who is an editor, an educator, and blogger, and co-host at The Chalk Face. Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Hi.
Thank you.
Number is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Now, this is a very tough subject. Buzzy, I'll start with you. I mean, because it's coming out, 46 states, the District of Columbia, are saying they're going to set common core standards. We still don't know really what that means definitively. And I've become an agnostic, trying to look at both sides of what this really means. We see some of the people interpret international studies saying that United States students are way behind the curve. Others, like Diane Ravitch, will look at those studies and go, no, that's not how you look at these studies. It doesn't mean that at all, really. They were not that far behind, and that this Common Core is not just thought through and is not the same thing as what E.D. Hirsch had in mind in the beginning anyway. So, Buzzy.
Well, first, very briefly, for those who don't know, Common Core is a set of educational standards for what the people who develop them think children, students should know and be able to do in order to be college and career ready in today's world. They were developed basically as an outgrowth of work of the National Governors Association, bipartisan, and the Council of Chief State School Officers, the state superintendents, also more or less nonpartisan. And, of course, there's enormous controversy over them. And I think as this discussion goes on, it's important to separate out some questions. And I sort of put four questions out there. One is, are they good standards? Are they of high quality? The second question is whether all states should use them. The third question is, should they be mandated nationally? And the fourth question, I think, is should testing based on the standards be delayed? I think as the discussion goes on, I think we'll find a lot of the opposition is more rooted in the testing related to the standards than to the standards themselves, and that discussion has become very politically polarized.
And Rashawn, where would you put it?
Well, here's, I always come at this, and I'll say it right here. I'm a strong supporter of Common Core. I do not say that Common Core is going to be the solution. There is no one solution. We have a complex crisis in this country. We're 33% of our kids are not reading when they're in fourth grade. They're struggling in math. And even when they graduate, many of our kids are not doing well in college and career. And we know based on the data that really if you want to actually progress in society and earn a middle class career, you need to have some form of college education. And so that's real. And you need to deal with all the various issues from the quality of standards, to the quality of curriculum, to the quality of teaching, to the quality of school environments to deal with these issues. What Common Core does is that for the first time in a long time, we now have a set of standards that actually are of high quality. They're actually, in fact, one of the things that we talk about with Common Core is that they're of higher quality, and especially in the reading standards, they're of higher quality than nearly all of the states that have the current standards, the standards that they had before the implementation of Common Core. And so what we're talking about is replacing standards that actually focus on what kids should actually be reading. We're focusing less on textbooks and more on actually reading whole, real text, reading the Declaration of Independence, reading Abraham Lincoln's speeches, reading nonfiction as well as fiction, because in the real world, you don't write a whole lot of essays about yourself. You are writing op-eds. You're writing opinion pieces. You're writing memos, things that are, basically you have to have facts and data at your hand. And so what we're doing with Common Core is actually providing a key lever for improving and actually transforming the quality of the school environment for our kids, especially for poor minority kids who we know are not getting high-quality education. But here's the thing. Well, you know, the reason why Common Core has become so controversial is for several reasons, and I'll hit on two of them. One is that, you know, in this country, we have a hard time agreeing about what kids should learn. And more importantly than that, we have a hard time agreeing on which kids should learn. The reality is we've had a long history of providing shoddy, subpar curricula standards, teaching to black kids, to Latino children, to American Indian, Alaska Native children, which I've worked with. And so we've done it in many ways. It's been deliberate. And so we have a hard time agreeing on whether those kids should learn. Kids who look like me should learn. Second issue is that, Common Core supporters have in many cases failed to really deal with some of the other issues of implementation that are involved in the standard, including, you deal with issues such as teaching. So those, there's several reasons involved for the controversy, but I really ultimately say it's about people like to talk about change, but nobody really wants to change anything, especially if it means making themselves or making their ideologies uncomfortable.
And Neil McCluskey, let me let you very quickly get into this as well, but I'm going to get some very specific questions out of here. Neil?
Sure. You know, there are several reasons to be opposed to the Common Core. I'm just going to hit some of them. I'm sure we'll get to many of the others.
Go ahead.
And I should say that I am not a curricular content expert. I can only talk about the policy. I can talk about the research, but that impacts the curriculum. So the first thing we need to understand is there is no empirical evidence that having national standards makes a difference. This hasn't made it in the debate because we didn't really get to have a debate. We didn't really get to have a debate because the federal government coerced states into adopting the Common Core and doing it in a hurry through Race to the Top and NCLB waivers. So, but the research is pretty clear in showing us that there is no meaningful impact of having national standards. Part of the reason for this.
We don't have any in the first place.
Neil, finish what you're saying.
We don't have national standards in the first place. My apologies.
Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah. And we could talk about that research if anybody wants to, because it's quite clear. The other thing is that most fundamentally, all kids are different. It's not that we're saying we don't want to teach all kids, but it doesn't make sense logically to say all students should be doing the same thing at the same time. Children are unique, and they learn different things at different times, different rates, at different interests, different skills and abilities. And going to one national and federally driven standard doesn't make sense in that context. Another thing is Common Core may be higher than many state standards. There is, though, big debate among people who are content experts about the actual quality of the standards. The important thing to understand is, if you're not an expert in this, is that even the experts are not omniscient. They don't definitively know what is the best possible standard, even if you could have one best standard for all kids, which you really can't because all kids are different. But in the absence of omniscience, you've got to have the ability for different standards, different goals, different ideas of what's best to compete so that you can see one thing may work better than something else. And that's the key to innovation, seeing something that lots of people haven't thought about. One or two people do think about it, one state maybe, one district. They try it and they say, hey, this actually works better than what, the consensus of experts say works. You've got to have that if you want the system continually improve. And then it's absolutely essential that we not overlook the role of the federal government in this, because that then takes away states being able to compete against each other, try other things, districts trying to compete against each other, try different things, which is what we see in federalism, competitive federalism. The federal government not only was the primary force twisting states' arms to adopt this thing, but Common Core supporters were saying it's the job of the federal government to do this as early as 2008. And it actually doesn't work.
But let me just jump in for this thing so I can get something kind of moving here and so people can figure out what's going on and get our listeners jumping in here at 410-319-8888, because most of our listeners, many are parents, teachers. Probably not teachers today, probably in school teaching, but parents and students. But join us here at 410-319-8888, your thoughts on Common Core and what it means. And so let me just ask you through this very simple question. Is it important that students, all students, no matter who they are, whether they come from urban school districts or wealthy suburban districts, be they African-American, white American, Puerto Rican, Mexican, whoever they may be in this country, Asian-American, should there be a common set of knowledge? Should there be a common set of knowledge that all students have to learn and understand between a certain point in education from kindergarten, let's say, to ninth grade, for argument's sake? Should that exist?
Well, I think so, in the sense that it doesn't have to be exactly the same.
What does
that mean? You're talking about...
What does that mean?
You're talking about general standards. If you look at the Common Core standards and the measures that they hold out in terms of what children should know at particular points in time, in terms of English, math, informational literature, literacy, foundational skills of reading, writing, and math. And it serves, it's interesting because it serves several purposes. One is to make sure that as a country, we're equipped. We have a real national interest in being able to have an educated and an informed populace. The other thing is, and it bears upon the word competition, we know that when states had their own standards and tests, there was a race to the bottom. No, that's not disputable. And so under No Child Left Behind, that's what happened. And that is what gave impetus to the movement for the Common Core standards. If the states, and we have to get into testing, if the states all use the same standards and tests, then there is competition between the states and there is accountability. There's no national accountability for the quality of education now because states use different standards and tests.
So let me stop you because I'm going to come back to the testing and competition. If it bleeds over into the next hour or something, it's fine with me. But I wanted to to Neil. Should there be a common core of knowledge, very simple question, that all students in this country should know? And then we can talk about who should define that common core, by the way. But should we?
Well, see, the definition is the hard part. And so I bet you would get the three of us, the four of us, and callers might all say, yeah, we think that there are things that everybody should know. And then we'd all disagree on what those are. And so the first problem is that it's easy to talk about, well, as a nation, there are things that everybody should know and should be able to do, but we don't agree on it. You can't operationalize that. You can't actually make it happen. And then when we look at the way systems actually work, not just education, but beyond education, what we see is that they work best when you let unique individuals, because that's what every child is. We're not, we may belong to one race, but that doesn't define us. We may belong to a particular religion. That doesn't define us. We're all individuals, and we have different needs, abilities, desires, and the idea of going to one set nationalized standard ignores that very basic reality. And the other thing I should say is there isn't evidence of a race to the bottom from No Child Left Behind. It is true, though, that most states already start off at a pretty low level. The fact of the matter is there's nothing about going federal that's going to change that, and there's no reason we should think going federal will change
that. So let me—I know, Buzz, you want to respond to that very quickly, but let me get Rashawn to come in real fast on this as well. I mean, should there be a common core of knowledge?
Yeah.
But what does that mean? I mean, and who defines what that common core is?
Well, I think society has already defined that, and in fact, society defines it over time, and it changes over time. I mean, 100 years ago, there was a certain set of knowledge that you needed to understand in order to work in society, and a lot of it didn't involve anything such as abstraction. You didn't have to think about the complexities of life in many ways because it wasn't necessary. Today is a different story. Today, if you are in this world, you are the reality is, in order to function in American society, to be a productive citizen, and this has always been true, even 200 years ago, to be honest. Even 200 years ago, if you wanted to be a productive citizen and be a leader in society and actually transform your communities and be and help your families move from poverty into the middle class, you needed to have a set of knowledge. You needed to know how to read. You needed to know how to write. You needed to know a little bit of math, and now you need more math. You need more of those things because reading and literacy and math helps you understand the world around you and the abstractions. And so when Niels talks about, well, hey, you know, each kid is different. Well, yeah, all people are different, but they're different on the margins, not necessarily in the main. In the real world, we all have to work in, we have to all have to work, we all start jobs, some of us start businesses, you know, all those things. But at the end of the day, we all have to function in the same kind of society and be able to do some basic things in order, and actually really some basic and complex things in order to survive and succeed in the world.
Finish it. I just want to push this a little bit ahead. Go ahead, Rashawn. Just finish up. I want to get Morning in here.
Yeah, and so you need that information. What Common Core does is it actually focuses on understanding the abstractions. It's very, in fact, in many ways, some will say, well, it's scripted, so it ends up being curricular, but it's not really. It's scripted because you, in order to provide, help teachers do the complex work of educating children, in order to provide this sort of strong, comprehensive education, you need standards that are actually tell you what, you know, give you a sense of what needs to be done. Most standards before Common Core were very unspecific, didn't tell you very much, and were shoddy. And you basically could throw anything into there, including the kitchen sink, and it would be fine.
Rashawn, I just got to jump in. I want to get Mourna McDermott has called in for just a couple of minutes. One of our other guests didn't make it, so she's calling in for a second to give a perspective. Go back to Buzzy and Carla and Russ. You're the first two callers up. We're going to come to your call, so please stay with us. But Mourna and then Buzz.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. How are you?
Well, good to talk to you, Mourna.
Thank you for hosting this conversation because obviously it's a hot topic in Maryland and everywhere else. And I represent the voice of basically a progressive resistance against the Common Core with United Opt Out National, which is trying to end high stakes testing and corporate takeover of public education. And just listening to what one of your presenters was just speaking about, the necessity for scripted curriculum, one of the things that strikes me is how easy it is for us to mandate a scripted curriculum for everybody else's children except for their own. Because if you go to the private schools, if you go to these well-funded private schools that that politicians and millionaires send their children to, they don't have scripted curriculum. They have constructivist learning. They have hands-on learning. They have a class size of, you know, a ratio of one teacher to 12 students. They have highly trained professional teachers. They do art and music. They don't focus on high-stakes testing. But this is something that we think we must do to everybody else's child in order for some imaginary level of accountability. And what we've done is we've turned schools, teachers, and children into being accountable to millionaires, because this isn't Republican-led. This isn't Democrat-led. It's corporate-led, and it's corporations from both sides of the aisle. Rupert Murdoch, who owns Wireless Generation, that's going to collect all this data.
I'm sorry, we must have just lost her on her cell phone. We'll get more on the back. But, Buzz, you can come in. I mean, because one of the things she was saying, I think, is all true. You look at, we'll come back to in a minute, the Broad Foundation, which is this educational reform group that puts all this data out. They're also the same organization that puts out data about how to privatize your schools. So...
Well, let me try what I consider a reality check. People on the right and left are not opposed to the nature of the standards themselves. The real issue is conservatives are opposed to what they consider as federal intrusion. Many liberals, particularly those I call education progressives, are anti-testing. And... the education establishment is against the higher bar for accountability that comes with the higher standards and the more stringent testing.
So what does that say to you?
It says to me that this is what we need to do to raise the standards. And it is a legitimate concern. It's almost philosophical of whether you believe in federal role in this versus calling it intrusion. In my mind, this is of such great national interest. It makes no sense to have 50 different states with standards and tests or 15,000 school districts. And this involves the hard work, and that's another level of this is implementation, the hard work of improving the teaching in order to implement the higher standards. It's hard work, but it's work that needs to be done. And I think if we clear away some of the political and some of the ideological chatter that goes with this and get back to the hard issue of improving the instruction, I think this is a step in the right direction.
Well, we've got to get a very brief break. When we come back, we'll come back to our guests. And, Carla, we're going to come right back to your phone call. Carla from Anne Arundel County and Russ from Baltimore City, 410-319-8888. We'll be right back as we examine Common Core. See ya.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you. Just because
Johnny Mathis, born on this day in 1935. A little kind of soothe our souls as we debate Common Core. We are here with Dr. Warner McDermott, one of the administrators of United Opt Out. Has been education and teacher education for 25 years and co-organized the Occupy Department of Ed. We are here with Buzzy Hedelman, former city school board member here in Baltimore, former director of Baltimore City Services and state secretary of Human Resources. Author of the book, It's the Classroom, Stupid, A Plan to Save America's School Children. Rashawn Biddle, editor of Dropout Nation, an online magazine of education issues. And Dr. Neil McCluskey, who is associate director of the Center for Educational Freedom at the Cato Institute, who wrote the book Behind the Curtain, Assessing the Case for National Curriculum Standards. 410-319-8888. Carla, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you for holding on. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm actually from Baltimore, but I work in Anne Arundel County. Here's my concern about the national standards. There are standards that were removed from the school system, period, such as phonics, okay, such as critical thinking and reading comprehension, all right? There's also inherent bias in nationalizing the standard in that people of color, all peoples of colors, stuff gets negated. They're trying to change the curriculum and change the textbooks to kind of make discussions about enslavement and atrocities that have happened to peoples of color in the social studies curriculum. So I have an issue with the way that these changes are being implemented. Things that used to be when I was going to school in education are no longer there, such as phonics and critical thinking. You know, by the time they reach a community college level, the students, get ready to go on to college, the first 2 years or the first year, they have to take remediation classes because students are not taught study skills and things that they need in order to be successful in life. And as a person who does workforce development and a person who is charged with trying to help the people get back to work or get to work, there is a lot lacking. So if you don't link the education to career passing, that whereas people have basic skills in order to be able to be employed and employable, there's much, you know, sense of it. And also one of the things that one of the other callers mentioned is the fact that people who are implementing these policies, they don't send their children to public school. They send their children to private schools or independent schools.
And I think all the points you made are important. Let me take the one point you made and come back to what these Common Core standards should be and who is setting them and why. But I think, Rashawn, very quickly, and we'll go around the room here, one of the critiques that Carla just made, especially in history and literature, is who's making these decisions. And many people have argued in many journals that communities of color will not be represented in this. We're creating this kind of homogenous American culture once again without thinking about who we are.
Well, and I would actually disagree about that. In fact, one of the things I'll make a point is that, you know, if you look at what's happening in American Indian and Alaska Native communities, in fact, the work that Native communities are doing now in implementing Common Core, it's not just about implementing the standards. They're actually using the standards to actually also implement their own, their curricula that's culturally relevant to them, that represents their tribal history, that represents their tribal knowledge, that represents their tribal language. It actually provides language immersion. In fact, the Pueblo of Jimenez in New Mexico are doing this work, and in fact, they've been doing this work for the past few months, helping teachers who are working in BIE schools and traditional public schools and charter schools and schools that are other forms of schools actually provide that cultural knowledge in curricula. In fact, that's one of the great things about Common Core. In fact, it's also one of the reasons why Common Core is so opposed by a good number of folks especially on folks who are movement conservatives. This is opening the door for communities to actually do their own work, to create their own curricula, to actually develop curricula that actually works for them. And in fact, if you look at Common Core and look at the exemplar text, one of the books that's involved as the exemplar text is The Bluest Ties by Toni Morrison, a book that's representative of the Black experience. As we know, a few weeks ago in Ohio, a school board leader had basically complained about the book being in there because he argued that it was pornography. The reality is that it's not really about the content. It's about what it means. It means you're representing the Black community. You look at books like Son of the Natives. Look at books on Little Bighorn, where books are being part of exemplar texts that are actually bringing in a full perspective about the role of minority communities and the nation's very shameful history.
I'm sorry, I apologize, I keep interrupting everybody, but there's so many people on this panel, I want to kind of get to some points here and let people hear what everybody's saying. And Morna, I know you have to run, so could you respond?
Yeah, oh my God, in 30 seconds or less.
No, I didn't say that, but go ahead.
One of the biggest outrages I have is that Race to the Top and the current administration, in my mind, hijacked the language of social justice. When Arne Duncan uttered the words that, you know, education is a civil rights issue of our time, he was absolutely right, but for all the wrong reasons. The testing, the No Child Left Behind, the policies that we're putting into place with Common Core are exacerbating the disparities between rich and poor. They're exacerbating the problems, issues around poverty. They're exacerbating the gap between children of color and white children in suburban neighborhoods because it's taking money, millions of dollars that we're now spending on more tests and professional development and Common Core that we're going to give them all apps. We're going to give them all iPads. But they still don't have clean drinking water. They still don't have air conditioning. They have crumbling infrastructure, and we're firing their teachers. So we're going to test them more, and we're going to do some imaginary gold standard, if it were even that, set of Common Core is going to remediate for poverty and change things where it's insane.
So,
I have to disagree with that.
Morna, I know you have to roll, so if you do, I appreciate you being part of that, jumping in at the last second for us, but go ahead.
I'm still here.
Okay, good. Rashawn, go ahead. I'm sorry. Don't go to Neil.
I have to disagree with that statement. If you look at the data from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, one of the things you have seen is that we have actually reduced gaps between poor and minority communities. And in fact, we've actually reduced those gaps. And in fact, between 2002 and 2011, the percentage of Black fourth grade students reading below basic declined by 9 percentage points. And meanwhile, we've also seen declines for Latino communities. And if you look in certain states such as Florida, which have been aggressive in reform, we've seen even greater declines. Now, this doesn't mean that we're anywhere near where we need to be. The reality is that we have a complex problem. And in fact, one of the reasons why Common Core is so controversial is because it is now where accountability is part of helping and transforming education and addressing these inequities. But you now have to go into the classroom. You have to deal with teaching. You have to deal with curricula. You have to deal with school climates, especially school climates, so they can work with our communities who are and let's be real. Back in my grandmother's day, the schools were just as hostile to poor minority families as they are today. And nothing's changed. And we need to do, and those, and the work that needs to be done in those things through policy and through practice, that's what's driving much of the pushback. As I always say, change, people want change, but nobody wants to change. So, and this is what Common Core represents, change.
So we haven't had Neil back in here, nor Buzzy, and we also have other callers calling in. Russ, we're going to come to your call in just a second. But Neil, go ahead, then Buzzy, then we'll go to our caller, Russ.
Yeah, I'll try and be fast. I only really see two things that are important here, and they go back to what the caller said. The reality is that these standards, Common Core, especially in English language arts, which seems to be the main concern, they don't actually prescribe much of any actual content. There's very little required reading, and this is a very important part about assessing these standards, is at first, the first thing we hear is, well, this gives us a Common Core. It builds cultural literacy. This is, you know, this is going to get us all on the same sheet of music so that everybody gets the same thing. But then we hear, what this is really enabling different communities to do is tailor education to the specific needs of their community. And so we're kind of being told by Common Core supporters, this is going to give you whatever you want, no matter who you are. The fact of the matter is, we don't know very much about these standards. They haven't been tried, and they're very much an empty vessel. What's going to be absolutely crucial, and Mark, you've mentioned this, Buzzy, you've mentioned this, is the test. What will be on the tests? What gets tested is what gets taught. Who's going to decide what's on those tests? Which pieces of literature are we going to see tested over and over so that we know that those are things kids really need to learn? And the very concerning thing about this is the federal government coerced states into signing on to these standards to race to the top and signing on to national tests before we knew anything or before we had final content on the standards. And we still haven't seen the final PARC test and the final Smarter Balance test. So we had these huge unanswered questions that we had to ignore, or states generally had to ignore, if they wanted to get federal money, which is what's driven this whole thing.
I'd say to jump into this.
Let me just let Buzzy jump in real fast, and I'll just come right back, Buzz.
Well, as I thought, I mean, so much of this discussion is going to focus on testing. Morn is obviously adamantly opposed to testing, less so the standards, but the concern is the testing that goes with them. I agree with Neil that the main issue down the line will be implementation and what is taught. And I think opponents want to have it both ways. On the one hand, you don't like the idea that they're prescribed in a sense. On the other hand, you say, well, they really need to be filled out. And in fact, they do. I mean, they set general high-level standards, and then it will be up to states and local school districts to determine how to achieve those standards. And that is the basis, of course, for a whole large discussion in terms of different viewpoints about how we go about that.
Which we'll try to do in part of the last half an hour of this show a little bit. And before I let you back in, Roshan and Morna, let me go get another caller in here, 410-319-8888. We'll come right back to you, Morna, and then Roshan. Russ, you're on the air.
Please, Mark, to you and your guests.
Welcome.
Mark, I every time I hear a conversation like this, it just stirs in my mind that we behave today as though we don't know what a good education system is or never had one. And that's not true, Mark, because the education, public education that we experienced as far as PARC was world-class and the envy of the world. So, you know, why are we behaving like this? But when it comes to the Common Core, with me, if you're talking about teaching kids what to think, I think that's what has us in trouble now, and I want to thank your panel member for bringing out the political aspects of this problem, because if we want to teach kids what to think rather than how to think, that we've gotten ourselves in trouble. If I were to come up with a solution to this, K-6 elementary education should be just that, and that can be standardized across the country, because what we ought to be concerned with there is outcomes. If you don't have the action in education is K-6. If you haven't engaged the kid by the sixth grade, if they're not enjoying the success that results from knowing how to read a book, how to write a sentence in a paragraph, put it together, and how to do basic arithmetic, the game is over. So what I'm saying, if we want to go with a system where we're going to develop how to develop abilities to fine. I'm with that across the board, and we can test that. But if you're going to talk about teaching kids what to think and being aware of conservatism and all this other garbage that we pile on society, no, we don't need that. So what my points are simple. We've had a good education system. Maybe we need to review that and dust it off because it worked quite well for me. And two, we need to get out of the business of trying to produce conservatives and blue people, red people, and all that stuff, and teach our children how to compete on the world scale by having the abilities to do read, write, arithmetic. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much. Morna, let you take back take a shot, and then Rashawn, you come in.
Yeah. Mark, it's really simple. We've known, and by we, I mean researchers, educators, people in the field of education, not politicians, not businessmen, have known for decades what works in education, especially for children who are, you know, largely underserved populations. We know that smaller class size works. We know that art, PE, dance, and music keep them in school. We know that culturally relevant pedagogy and teaching interests them. We know wraparound services to remediate for poverty work. We know that relationships with teachers work. We know what works. And yet, rather than put the money and the effort toward those things, we're going to spend billions of dollars on experimental models that have never been proven? Does that make sense to anybody?
Rashawn?
First thing, we don't know what works. We know what some
there's a problem.
We know what works. but let's put it this way. Class size?
Yes, we do.
The evidence of class size reduction is that it may work well for poor kids, but no one's really sure because the data, the studies were not high quality. Second thing, we know if educators were the experts they were, we wouldn't have high levels of overuse of suspension and expulsion. We wouldn't have high levels of poor young black men being diagnosed as learning disabled, even though the real issue is that they're illiterate and they need reading remediation. So let's cut that part out. Number three, as far as Neil's argument that this is coercion, you know, that's really ridiculous. Here's the thing. The federal government, since the Reagan administration, has played a role of supporting reforms at the state level. In fact, many of the reforms that have started at the state level and really have been then supported at the national level by administrations who realize that education is important and we need a high-quality education for our children. And in fact, in the case of Common Core, these development of Common Core began even in the early 2000s with the work of Achieve, Inc. and working with states through the American Diploma Project. And then it moved up to becoming Common Core. And what has happened is the Obama administration supported that work. They have supported that work through Race to the Top. They supported that work through the No Child waivers, which I generally oppose. And that's a reasonable and respectable thing for an administration, for the federal government to do, to support reforms that are being undertaken by states that want to do the work. And so, you know, when we talk about this whole federal coercion argument is, you know, one, it doesn't make sense. And number two, the fact of the matter is education is a national priority, and the federal government should be in a role of supporting efforts to transform our schools.
Can I just respond to that real quick? I can do it in about 30 seconds.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it's simply wrong to say there was no coercion. You can simply look at the timeline of states adopting Common Core without even having a debate before they were even published. And it was all to get, or for most states, it was Race to the Top money. The Common Core people said the job of the federal government was to incentivize adoption before there was an Obama administration. So if we're not going to be honest about the very basic, clear facts about this, that's why we can't get into the really important debate about what's the quality. Should the federal government be doing this? And we have to understand what actually happened, and there is absolutely no question. Even the Fordham Institute acknowledges that the federal government went beyond what it should be doing in coercing the adoption of these standards. So that's really something that should be off the table at this point.
And no, and what they've said is that the federal government may have played a too large of a role in supporting it, but they've never said that the federal government that has coerced it. So, Neil,
let me jump in real fast. I'll get quick thoughts from both Buzzy and then Demorna.
this is all about accountability, and it is particularly about accountability for the performance of minorities, low-income students, students with disabilities, and English language learners who have particularly trailed and are far behind. And those of us who are generally liberals should be ashamed of the fact that for years and years after we passed Title I and after we passed the Individual with Disabilities Education Act, that we didn't look for accountability. And it is true that there are arguments against testing, but the central fact is that if you do not have some kind of testing, then the education establishment, despite the heroic efforts of individual teachers, has shown that it will not be accountable for their performance. And so their performance, while it has improved somewhat over the years, it is so far below world-class standards. It is so far below the capacity to be ready for college and careers that we need to take steps. And so the implementation of the Common Core and the testing is the work that is of crucial importance to this country, and particularly minorities.
And Morna, go ahead, then I get this call.
Yeah, look, I'm liberal, too. I consider myself progressive. And unfortunately, we do have an accountability to our children. I agree with you there. But this is about greed, because if you look at who lobbied to get this legislation passed, all of these reforms, it's Pearson Publishing, who on the backside of it puts their hand out and gets the money to, oh, by the way, deliver the goods. It's a chief who is funded by Walton, by the Eli Broad Foundation, by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who, oh, by the way, will provide all the laptops that every child in the country is going to need by now. This is about money, and as much as it's federal intrusion, which it is, you've got to peel back the curtains and look behind federal intrusion and see that this is also largely funded by right-wing corporate ideology. And, I just need for my, conservative compatriots in the anti-Common Core movement to understand that this is not a communist socialist plot plotted by the progressives. This is backed by big right-wing money, and we've got to acknowledge that we're all being sold up the river on a big lie.
Let me go to the phone before anybody comes back. Let me jump, get a caller in here. They'll come right back to you all. 410-319-8888. Catherine, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the discussion, because this is a topic that has needed to be implemented, discussed, rolled out, and I'm very happy that the Common Core has arrived. However, my concern is for the teachers, the parents, to join in on what's happening with the Common Core. What I'm finding, and I work with teachers, I'm conversating with teachers, they're not being given the materials, and this is not only in Baltimore City, but as well Baltimore County. Again, we're setting our children up to fail because the teachers, half of them don't know what they're doing with implementing Common Core, and the professional development one-day workshop may not be enough. So this is something that must be an ongoing implementation and professional development learning curve, as well as the funding to provide the teachers with what they need to get our children prepared.
So jump right back in here. Buzz, you get in. Rashawn was trying to jump in as well. But
I agree 100% with the caller. And to the extent that teachers do need to be better prepared through a variety of ways, professional development and so forth, I think that even though I am a very strong supporter of Common Core, that implementation of the sanctions that might go with it and even implementation of the testing should be delayed for a year or two. I think the Maryland State Department of Education made a basic mistake in not delaying the MSA or putting off the MSA testing for a year. I think we have to give school systems the time to do this thing right. One of the things that don't work better is we push things ahead before we're ready, and the least recognized issue in reform of public education is to improve the instruction in the classroom through better professional development, more resources, and so forth.
Now, we only have a few minutes left here, but Roshan, I heard you trying to jump in as Neil, but go ahead, Roshan.
Yeah, but, you know, and I also agree with the caller. I mean, this is the issue, you know, again, Common Core is one part of the solution. It's not the whole thing. And, in fact, one of our biggest challenges is that is the low quality of teaching in the classroom. And part of it is professional development, which doesn't really work. But it's also about how we prepare teachers before they get into the classroom. National Council on Teacher Quality looked at teacher prep programs, especially in math and in reading, and they found that most just don't do a really good job of preparing our teachers to do the work. And this is an issue. This is a long-term. Unfortunately, this is a long-term issue that we need. That in many ways, one of the best things about implementation of Common Core is that it's forcing these questions. Well, we need to look at the ed schools that are getting billions of dollars a year from our taxpayers and doing a terrible job of preparing teachers for the work that they need to do, which is complex work, which is, you know, it's not just about teaching. It's also about being able to help kids nurture children so they can achieve their full potential and nurturing school developing school leaders who can help those teachers. And, you know, this is, you know, I say Common Core supporters, you know, my fellow Common Core supporters have not really thought this part through, and, you know, it's to their detriment.
But it's time for a break. I'm trying to get so 410-319-8888. I know, Vicki, you're the next caller up. We might have to take you right after we come back from this break. This is a very intense subject, and I want to thank, first of all, Dr. Maura McDermott. I really appreciate you jumping at the last minute to fill a very important gap here in this conversation. I'm glad you could do that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
And I look forward to having you back on very soon again, because we're going to keep going with Common Core over the coming months. It'll be one of our
many times.
I will do that first. You'll be the first person we call when it comes to that position. And Roshan Biddle, I really appreciate you being part of the show, too. You were excellent, and I appreciate the input, and look forward to having you back as soon as we can.
Hey, it's great to be on. Thanks again.
And Dr. Neil McCluskey, always a pleasure to have you on as well, and I appreciate you taking the time with the listeners today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And folks, don't go away. We're going to continue Common Core. We're going to talk about implementation. Buzzy Hedlund is going to remain with us. We'll bring on two more guests to talk about implementation, what it means for our school systems. I'll continue to push my questioning agnostic position during the next half an hour. And Vicki, we're going to come right to your call. We have tweets from Kalila Harris, which fit into this next segment perfectly. We'll read Kalila's tweets at the top, along with taking your call, Vicki, so you can hold on for two more minutes. We'll come to your call. Stay with us for continuing our discussion on Common Core at 410-319-8888. And we'll be right back. Johnny Mathis, chill us out.
You turn to me with a kiss in your eyes, and my heart feels a thrill beyond compare. A time for us, someday there'll be, when chains are torn by courage born of a love that's free, a time when dreams...
Johnny Mathis, a time for us. He was born this day in 1935, and we'll celebrate what he gave to us during our breaks. We're talking, continue our conversation about Common Core. On the way to this conversation, I'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com, or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. We're going to continue our conversation about Common Core, look at its implementation, what would that mean, what will it mean with our guests. Remaining with us is Buzzy Hedlund, former Baltimore City School Board member, former director of Baltimore City's Social Services, former State Secretary of Human Resources, author of the book, It's the Classroom, Stupid, A Plan to Save America's School Children. We're also now joined by Lynette Gustafero, who is an executive director of Teaching Matters, a nonprofit dedicated to increasing the effectiveness of urban teachers, and Michael McShane, research fellow in education policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute and co-editor of the forthcoming book, Common Core Meets the Reform Agenda. Michael, Lynette, Buzzy, good to have you all here for this part of the program.
Thanks.
And the number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. We have a bunch of tweets in that we will read in just a moment. But let me open the show with a phone call. 410-319-8888. And Vicki, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Very well. Welcome to the show.
All right. Well, I have three points that I want to make, and I'll try to be as quick as I can. First is the question of quality. Supposedly Common Core is going to make our students more ready for college, more ready for the world of employment. Not according to some of the experts that were on the panels who refused to sign off on the standards when they saw what the standards were. Dr. Sandra Stotsky, who was on the English Language Arts standards, said that the standards would prepare children for college readiness at the level of the seventh grade. So what is seventh grade college? What is seventh grade material now would be considered college readiness. It's felt that these standards are really only preparing people for a community college, which there's no problem with that, but that's what they're preparing everyone for. Same thing in math. The fellow that was on the validation committee for math said the same thing. It was ridiculous. They were using techniques that had been proven failures many, many times before. Nobody has talked, at least as far as I've heard this morning, about the cost. Up here where I am in Harford County, there is an online newspaper that's talking about the incredible cost of Common Core and how we're nowhere near ready to absorb it. And the third thing I haven't heard anyone talk about is the data mining and tracking aspect of this. And just to give you an idea how important the data mining aspect, the information gathering aspect of Common Core is that when folks were applying for Race to the Top money, they were given points for various things. They got 120 points or 117 points for accepting the data mining aspect, but only 50 points if they had shown that they had improved their poorly performing school. So that tells you a little bit about where the real priorities are with Common Core. I'm not a progressive. I'm not a liberal. I'm a conservative. And I think that since we've had the Department of Education in place, I haven't seen any great improvement in education standards in this country, and I see no reason to think that further involvement by the federal government is going to change that.
Vicki, thank you so much. We'll go to Buzzy and then go around the room and jump into this. Buzzy,
well,
go
again,
ahead.
Again, an underlying issue is the federal role. And in my view, I agree that the federal government has coerced states, but I think that's a good thing, in the same way that the federal government had to coerce the states on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, pharmaceutical drug safety, traffic safety, occupational safety. The point is that the history of this country shows that the states and localities by themselves will never address sufficiently the needs of minorities, low-income citizens, and other disadvantaged populations. And so, again, with respect to that dimension of this problem, it seems to me it is one whether you believe in a national role where there is a national interest and a crying national need.
So let me go very quickly. Michael McShane, welcome. McShane, welcome. Lynette Gustafara, welcome. Let me go to you first, Michael, then Lynette. Then let's get in some issues about how this is being implemented or not.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to sort of address the issues that were brought up by the caller, I think the first question about quality, I think people of good faith will disagree about this question. They're standards experts. It seems that the preponderance of standards experts tend to be more bullish on the Common Core. there are dissenting opinions, though, Sandy Sotsky being one of the most vocal. But I think one of the issues brought up that isn't talked about a lot that I'm glad the caller brought up was the idea of cost. If we think about the changes that are going to need to be made to align instruction to the Common Core, so new instructional materials, be they textbooks, professional development, supplemental resources, as well as the new assessments that are being developed in order to measure student progress towards, there's a real cost at a time in which state budgets are tight, the federal budget is in limbo as we speak. So I think that's a real concern that leaders need to be thinking about moving forward. And just to that last point on the data mining and race to the top and all of that, I mean, states have been putting together longitudinal data sets of student performance for years. I mean, I think Tennessee started the first one in the early 1990s. I think that some fears, especially related to the NSA scandal that happened and all of that, has really kind of fomented this fear that they're collecting data that they shouldn't on children. But I think doing things like collecting student test scores and eventually being able to link those to labor market outcomes and others so that people can do research isn't actually something harmful and may actually be really helpful to tracking the performance of our education system.
Lynette?
Mark, thank you for having me on.
I appreciate you being with us.
I really approached this. I was a former teacher from Baltimore, and I now run an organization that's supporting thousands of teachers across New York to implement Common Core. So I always take my cues from teachers and how they respond. And, you know, there is a mixed response amongst teachers. But first and foremost, I have yet to see a teacher who hasn't really, once they've dug into the standards, hasn't walked away impressed and of the view that this will ultimately support higher learning and sees it as a higher expectation and that requires them to have the time to work collaboratively and really dig in and unpack. Now, the concerns they have speak to all the issues that I think have been brought up. It's the devil's in the details. The devil is in how we implement this. If we implement this as a scripted curriculum, the Common Core standards are actually requiring that we teach children higher level thinking. That's part of the work. You can't actually have scripted curriculum amongst your teachers and then expect them to teach higher order thinking. So that I believe the standards actually, by definition, require implementation that allows teachers the time and supports to work together to really make meaning of these standards and then work with their classrooms. And so I'm fairly positive about the standards themselves. I think, again, the devil's in the details.
So let me read these two tweets that came in because they fit right into what you were just saying. Khalila Harris had tweeted in, and her handle is @edtobefree. She's an interesting person who's run a school in this community. She wrote, issue of Common Core, not the standards, but prep of teachers to use practices that facilitate higher order of thinking for all kids, and then tweeted in as well, accountability perversely incentivized prep for tests, not teaching for life. Common Core is a good step, but teacher prep selection must change. So let's start there.
One of the strengths of Common Core is an opportunity to focus everybody. And, the word common actually allows people to work together. And I always say that to teachers. If we work in common on a curriculum, then we can actually speak the same language. So, we have the issue of private companies who are seeing this as a way to make a lot of money. I absolutely think that's a real issue. But at the same time, you have ed schools that can now focus very specifically across the country on what it is that we expect kids to teach and learn and graduate those teachers more prepared so that when the teachers come out, they can hit the ground running. So Common Core is a boon to everybody, and it allows everybody to potentially improve the efficiency and the effectiveness in which they focus all of the resources that they're putting into their various areas.
Michael, and then over to Buzzy.
Yeah, so I actually, I started teaching in Montgomery, Alabama. And one of the things that when I first heard about the Common Core, especially when in relation to instructional materials or professional development tools, was that one of the things that was frustrating being a teacher in a small state when every state had their own set of standards is that we didn't have a huge demand or a huge market for materials, professional development, et cetera, that were aligned to our standards. Generally, big markets like Florida, New York, Texas, California sort of set the market for those things. And with the Common Core, I think exactly what Lynette was saying, now there's one large nationwide marketplace. So if a cool app developer in Silicon Valley develops something, my former students in Alabama would be able to take advantage of that. But one thing that I think I'm probably a little bit more bearish on the willingness and desire of schools of education and traditional teacher training programs to reorient themselves towards the Common Core. If the content knowledge needs to be increased, as many people who are observing the Common Core say, especially for elementary school teachers in mathematics and in English language arts, if those instructional skills need to change, I don't know the real sort of lever that policymakers have to get education schools to change the way they prepare teachers. So it would require a big shift of theirs, and there could be any number of reasons that education school professors may be skeptical of the standards themselves. They may not like the initiative broadly, and there's no real way to get them to teach what we need them to teach to prepare prospective teachers. So that's where I kind of push back a little bit.
A couple of brief comments on, I think, the thoughtful expressions of Lynette and Michael. First, on cost. It's going to cost more money
to train
teachers, to provide the interventions for struggling readers, which is the most neglected cost item in school budgets. We're going to have to use the money we have better, but we're going to need more. And to touch upon what Michael said last, I agree that we cannot count on schools of education. If there's one thing that everybody agrees on, it's their weakness, and we're going to have to shift teacher education. One of the things that we need more money for is classroom coaching. We need mentors in the classroom around interventions. And one other thought with respect to Lynette's mention of scripted versus higher order skills. I mean, I think that's a false dichotomy, and you'd probably agree on that too. What we may need scripted based on early reading skills and what we know about that is different than what we may want in terms of higher order skills when we get up into the upper grades, once children have the foundational skills of reading, math, and written language.
Lynette, you were about to say what?
Yeah, I would echo that. What I was referring to is there's curriculum at all levels, which, you know, every sort of word that the teacher comes out of the teacher's mouth might be spelled out. And what I happen to know is that even at the lower levels of 1, 2, and 3, there, when you're trying to master these new, more difficult skills that require a second grader to really cognitively grasp math in a way they hadn't before, it's hard to script that for teachers. They actually have to work collaboratively to really look at whether they're successful and failing and come up with new strategies. And the deeper we expect the kids to learn, the more teachers actually have to problem solve to figure it out. And that's been our experience. The coaching and mentoring is key, but, you know, one way to save cost on that is to you can have coaching and mentoring, but you really target the development of lead teachers in the building, those that seem to be having the most success, and you give them the time to work with their colleagues. So if we spend our professional development dollars on that versus, you know, the multi-$1,000 workshop from the private company, if we really restructured and used the resources to support teachers to really learn in their schools. The research shows that that is actually a much more sustainable and viable strategy to move the needle in terms of kids learning.
Well, it raises a bunch of issues about people trying to implement this at the moment. There are 46 states and the District of Columbia, if I have it correct, that somewhere around that, right, Buzzy?
Yeah.
So the question becomes, do we really know what we're implementing yet? I mean, everybody I talk to, teachers, school systems, are very unclear about what's being implemented, how it's being implemented, and how that conflicts or doesn't conflict the notion of testing and who's being tested for what. And I think even though this is we've created this debate, I'm not sure we really know where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Well, different states and school districts are going about it at different paces and in different ways.
So does that mean the national standard is a myth?
No, of course not.
Why not?
Because the national standards allow states and districts to determine how they're going to achieve the what that's based in the standards. And I think close to home here, I think that the Baltimore City is doing a very conscientious job of beginning to, you know, develop lesson plans and so forth and curriculum materials and professional development. Education Week has run a series of articles on what the D.C. schools are doing. But, again, it's a mammoth job, and that's why I am strongly supportive of a 1 to 2 year delay
in what?
In the testing.
Which some superintendents are asking for.
Yes, I think they're absolutely right.
I concur with that. I think that that is actually one of the challenges of, you know, starting something so new and kind of rebooting the system this way with every teacher and every supervisor having to learn from scratch. There's such a high stress level. It would have been, I think, helpful if they had thought about a way to take that stress level just a notch down by giving people a one-year reprieve. Most organizations, companies, when they implement a brand new initiative, they do pilot. They do give people an opportunity to get through the kind of initial stress that happens with any big change. And we haven't done that. So we really have given people like a triple whammy of unnecessary pressures.
Yeah, I definitely concur with much of what's been saying, because I think, Mark, you kind of hit the nail on the head when we talk about we're not sure exactly what we're implementing because of this issue of testing. So standards are simply aspirational words on a page. They can be interpreted in any number of ways. Where the rubber meets the road is when we align tests to them and measure student progress towards those goals, whether stakes are attached to them or not. But one of the things that I think we need to think about moving forward was that initially, when the Common Core started, there was a hope that there was going to be simply one or two national tests or tests that were created by multi-state consortia. And in recent months, one of the two, they're two, the PARC Partnership for Assessment, I think, of Readiness for College and Careers, and one, Smarter Balanced, SBAC, Smarter Balanced, I can't remember exactly what it stands for.
Right.
But that PARC consortium, states have been leaving it with the designs of creating their own tests. So some of the stuff that we have about national comparability or national measurements of these standards is actually crumbling at the edges, which has really interesting implications for, again, if we have this question of do we know what we're implementing? Well, if every state develops their own tests or a large number of states develop their own tests, it's hard to say how we're going to be able to compare those across and know whether states are implementing it with the same level of fidelity.
The thing that concerns me about states' motivations to develop their own tests is it has been largely motivated by cost. And, you know, people don't like to spend money on testing, but one of our problems has been is we've been testing on the cheap. And the cheaper you test, the narrower the test. And so spending more money on assessment is counterintuitive. It actually supports much more effective instruction. And that's my concern, is that states will test on the cheap and actually you'll find the tests of lower quality. And then there's this issue of comparability. But I think that this first issue is really problematic.
So let me go to the phone, too. A lot of people are calling in. Let's get a couple of these callers in during the course of this conversation. 410-319-8888 as we continue to examine Common Core and what it means if and when it's implemented. Ricardo in Baltimore City, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Welcome. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. Okay, with the teacher education, I've said for years that we can't do it with the colleges. We need to have internship, just like they do in hospitals with doctors. Just throwing a teacher from college into a classroom, to me, is wrong. We need at least 2 or 3 years of internship at the school for the teachers, and someone said about the mentoring. And that's one thing. Then the second thing is the seventh grade level. Maybe if you are in a good county school, you can, you know, that's low. But if we had a seventh grade level for the city schools, or not city schools, forgive me, for minorities, it would be great. I look at the young lady in the Trayvon trial, and she couldn't read cursive. I'm like, that to me was a crime. How did she get to be a senior in school and not get that? And those are two things I'd like to see you address. The cost will level off in time. You know, maybe initially it'll cost something, but in time, that'll level off. And I'd like to hear you all cash in here. I mean, say something about those.
Ricardo, thanks. Those two points, especially the internship point and the point about how we're teaching, what we're teaching, is it important? Buzz, you want to jump in first?
Well, the internships is dead on as far as I'm concerned. Again, teacher education needs to be reshaped to get them out of the classroom at the colleges, so to speak, and out in the schools, and then that be followed up with sort of clinical experiences, so to speak. And as far as, you know, what students are learning and how they learn it, hopefully we have the standards, and we will improve instruction, beginning with improving teachers, but also having more better trained teachers and more resources, particularly to intervene with struggling learners at early ages. That's going to be the most cost-effective thing we can do. And to the extent that we know some things about what works and some things we don't know about, it is early foundational skills about which we know the most.
So, and do you have any quick thoughts on this, Lynette or Michael, before we go back to the phones?
No, I mean, I think one of the things that I continue to sort of think about as we spend so much time talking about the Common Core is that I think the bulk of the research tells us that, like, one of the most important in-school factors, if not the most important in-school factor, is the quality of the teacher. Not the quality of the standards, not the quality of the textbook, the quality of the teacher. And sometimes I worry, actually, with the amount of time and energy that we're spending in state houses and state boards of education debating Common Core standards, that we're actually giving short shrift to things that are much more important, which is revamping teacher preparation and mentorship and professional development.
Let me go back to another call in here, because we didn't deal with the cursive issue, which we can do maybe another, because I think it's important beyond kind of the racist attacks on her during that trial. That's something that many people raised, was what are we teaching and not teaching and why. 410-319-8888. Iris, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, welcome. We only have a few minutes left.
Okay, so the impulse to want to make sure that there's some things that every student is getting, I think is good. But because we know that there are places in the country where the standards have been very low and students were really getting pushed along without knowing very much. So the idea of sharing curriculum and sharing ideas about what people should be learning at different stages is great. But there's so many variables and so many factors in the classroom that this idea that you can just come down from the top with a set of standards that have not been tested, treat us like guinea pigs. I'm a school teacher in Baltimore City. We have very little funding, very few resources, and we have to throw away hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of materials that were still completely good, perfectly good, useful teaching materials because they're not aligned to the Common Core.
I'm sorry, I was half jumping because we're really almost out of time here, but I want to let our panelists respond very quickly. And Lynette, you want to begin, Michael and Buzzy, but very quickly.
Yeah, so the issue of throwing out those curriculum materials, you know, we've seen that in New York. I mean, we've had to completely readjust and make a switch. But I do want to make one point. It's not just that there are certain areas of the country where the kids are below standard. If you look just at math education in America, the entire nation is a good solid year or so behind in terms of the topics that we cover, in terms of how deep we go. We know that that the standard we've done in mathematics is a radical shift up for everybody in America. So this change is painful, it's expensive, but it is necessary.
And Michael?
Yeah, just very briefly, I mean, I think for all teachers out there, which is a very important perspective to think about, when you get this raft of new materials, you know, there's no sort of like official body that says that this textbook or this professional development module or this supplementary material is aligned to the Common Core. When I was writing about this earlier in the summer, I had a teacher tweet me a picture of a math textbook from 2007 that had a stamp on the front that said Common Core aligned, which the Common Core didn't even exist yet. So that's something that I think that needs to be a great deal of vigilance on behalf of teachers, school leaders, and others to make sure that these new materials that are coming out actually are aligned to the Common Core. And unfortunately, until sort of assessments come in and we figure out where students are on the standards, that's going to be a very difficult job to do.
A brief note on the notion that the support for the testing is crumbling. I'd say it's dwindling, but the reason it's dwindling is because the political opponents on the right and left are campaigning and lobbying to have that happen, and educators, the education establishment, is only too happy to see the rigorous tests watered down, dumbed down, as has been the history when states went it on their own.
I want to thank all of you. Buzzy Hettleman, who is a former member of the school board here in Baltimore and a former director of Baltimore City Social Services, as well as former Secretary of Human Resources, joining us in studio. Lynette Guastafaro, who is Executive Director of Teaching Matters, a nonprofit dedicated to increasing effectiveness of urban teachers. Michael McShane, Research Fellow in Educational Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Thank all of you for being with us. It's been a great discussion.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you all very much. We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to go out here with going out with Johnny Mathis, singing Someone on his birthday, and then we are going to talk about the latest decision made by the Maryland State Court of Appeals, which guarantees the right for everybody to have a lawyer at their first bail hearing. It's huge. Stay with us.
Someone wants to love you each and every night. Someone wants to say...